Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
You gonna have any unscripted, commentary on the music today, Bill?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I got it all loaded up.
We had some open mic moments last week with Bill.
Yeah.
I hate that song. I was like, yeah. Oh, wow, really? Now everyone knows. So
I'm very transparent.
Yeah, we are now. Although you are wearing pants, so that's good. We like that. So we have Officer Joe with us.
Was that an option?
That's why Bill's wearing pants. He's here to make sure Bill keeps the pants on. We have Officer Joe with us and Kathy.
Yes.
Because?
Let's eradicate before we recreate.
Right. We're talking about our favorite topic. But it's actually another iteration of our favorite topic. So not just the marijuana thing, not just the health effects, all that, which Lord knows we've got plenty of data for you on that. So if, in fact, you have not plugged in or you're thinking you're pretty smart on this topic, you should go to wethepeopleradio.us, click on the tab marked pot, fairly straightforward, up at the top of the page. All the shows are on there. And for those of you who don't know our work, our body of work, there's Bill's first one. Phone buzzing.
At least my ringer was off.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, yeah. So that's only a half of one. That's not a whole. It's not a whole point. Whole point off.
Everybody wants to talk to me.
That's right. Super popular. Kathy just called you just to see if your phone was on.
I wanted to see if you really had pants on or not.
Well, there was that. That's why the phone was on the desk, right? No pockets. Monty's like, I'm not going to be able to do this show as a federal prosecutor, for God's sake. I can't be affiliated with people like this. Hey, you know what? Serious topic with liberal humor, right? Not a liberal topic, just a liberal humor. So we kind of something for everybody.
Yeah.
But at wethepeopleradio.us, the archives are always up after the program. We leave them up there. They date back to October of 2010, I think, on a multitude of topics. They're free to listen to, free to download. We don't care what you do with them. We're not going to come after you like the guy that constantly sends me emails from some lawyer that says, you know, we're going to fine you because you used something off our Google search or whatever, idiots. But you can use our material however you like, and please go and educate people with it. There's a ton of information on there. And today, there's a ton of information on our guest, Monty Stiles. He has a wonderful bio on there for you with all of his detail, because I like to include that, not just because, oh, we have somebody on here who's really smart, but we have somebody on here who's really credible. So if we're going to talk about topics, so much of what we hear in our media on pretty much every level is opinion. And our opinion is, like, not worth that much, you know, opinions. But facts are kind of great, and we're big fans of that. We should change the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting back to facts.
We muddy the waters with facts.
Like the olden days, right, when we had facts.
Walter Cronkite.
Right? If you found out Walter Cronkite was a liar, wouldn't you be crushed?
Oh, I would totally be
like,
crushed.
Wait, what? My whole life's a lie.
We're dating ourselves, too, you know.
I liked it. It was fun. Well, it's kind of like, you know, hey, 30 years ago, and you think it's the 70s, right? But it's really the 90s, and yeah, it's like, wow, how old am I? So Monty served 30 years in law enforcement as a federal drug prosecutor. See, so the hammer's going to fall here pretty quick. All this buffoonery is going to end. unless, of course, Monty was starved for buffoonery. And after seeing the darkest aspects of the human condition, a passion for nature photography gave him the opportunity to rediscover everything that is wonderful in life. The fact that there were no humans, just animals, and he was looking at them through a lens, I'm sure didn't hurt. A world full of amazing people, beautiful landscapes, fascinating creatures, and boundless opportunities and adventures. And then I'll just add without handcuffs. During this time, he spoke to hundreds of groups on a variety of topics involving the law as well as the consequences of crime, which as a federal prosecutor, I'm sure he is well-versed. I have, he says, I now have the opportunity to speak and train all around the country and especially enjoy working with young people. And does a workshops, keynote addresses with law enforcement, drug education topics, and he also does presentations and things on fun things like the joy of photography, taking better pictures, and photo excursions. So that sounds kind of fun, actually. We should have made this a field trip radio program.
Only if I can bring my trailer.
So it's all upside for you, Monty. But honestly, Officer Joe's job was to go find us somebody to talk about hemp, because that isn't really something we've talked about it a little bit, but it's becoming kind of popular in some of our, you know, places that say have not legalized commercial growing, but now they're like, oh, wouldn't it be fun to grow hemp because hemp is so harmless and friendly and not marijuana-y. Yeah,
it worked out well for the guys up in Oregon.
Yeah, and that didn't work. That didn't pencil. But no. So you drew the short straw and became hemp guy.
From a peace officer status, Monty will know this, that we consider hemp to be marijuana light, less than 3% THC content, as tested by our very safe state labs.
Same ones who actually did discover that they're like a monster amount of chemicals on all of it.
Every week, almost every day now, I'm getting DCC recalls on California marijuana products. And as you know, and our audience will know.
Department of Cannabis Control? I was like, DCC, what the heck's a DCC? All right.
Department of Cannabis Control. And as you know, Siskiyou County just established another state of emergency, but this one's even a little bit more dire in that their peace officers, firefighters, and first responders going into the grows are now coming down with evil, wicked, mean, and nasty medical issues and having to be hospitalized and then rehospitalized for these same issues for responding into the grows because of the toxic chemicals in there. And we know now definitively from loads coming out of those grows that they are going into legal dispensaries. So these legal dispensaries are buying these illegal products, which we knew all along was going on. And so people are now consuming pesticides. And you can go on YouTube on any given day and just run what am I smoking, and you'll see from the marijuana community that they're up in arms because of all the stuff that's coming into the legal dispensaries now.
Terrific.
But not up in arms enough to not get it from the illegal.
Yeah, right.
Those.
Right. We'll still buy it.
So kind of only up in one arm?
Yeah. Half an arm.
Not both.
So hemp is interesting, and Monty will go into this, and I'm going to let him speak here in just a sec. Hemp's interesting because the hemp plant itself is indistinguishable from marijuana. So if you're growing hemp, the male hemp plant, which marijuana growers do not want to have in their fields because it will sterilize their fields. So if you're growing hemp, what we have found is that they will try to grow hemp one row on the outside, and they'll grow marijuana on the inside because it's indistinguishable. And in this county, Shasta County, we looked at hemp seriously, and they gave it a shot. They tried it. There wasn't enough commercial benefit for it, and the sheriff, rightfully so, came in and said, hey, I can't distinguish the difference. I don't have enough personnel to do that. Detectors are $25,000 each. I have to have two of them to confirm results, and even then, we're not really sure what's being grown. And he said it's just a ruse for the marijuana businesses to be able to overwhelm law enforcement and grow more marijuana within the county, trying to say, oh, it's hemp, it's legal, and then grow it everywhere. It uses the same amount of water. Again, it's marijuana light. It uses the same amount of water. It uses the same amount of chemicals. And the interesting thing about the marijuana plant itself is it's a vacuum. It's a vacuum to the earth. So any heavy metals that are in the earth, they actually use it in environmental remediation.
Yeah, Chernobyl stuff.
Right.
They used marijuana plants.
Yeah.
And all the heavy metals out of the ground.
Yeah. So, you know, is that something you really want to be smoking? Is that something we want to be supporting? And then as everyone sitting here and Monty will tell us,
Let's let Monty tell us.
Yeah, let's let Monty. Monty, I'm going to shut up, and it's time to hear
Monty,
from you.
Monty, you tell us.
Yeah, you tell us.
No, you tell us.
Officer Joey, I don't need to be on. You know all this stuff. You've been talking about it forever. You and others in your area, county, the epicenter of a lot of this chaos, have been at the forefront of fighting the battle. You have great law enforcement people. You've used great strategies to fight but you're surrounded, you're outmanned, outgunned, outfinanced, but you continue to fight. I admire that. It's awesome. It needs to continue. You are a shining beacon of what should be done. Unfortunately, you are outnumbered right now. Examples, experiences that people like you have had in California and elsewhere has given we Idahoans the tools, the information necessary to fight back before it happens to us. Those experiences have been the reason Idaho has never passed any of this nonsense, because we have learned from the experiences of other states that have experimented with disastrous liberal drug policies and laws that have created economic, medical, political, legal chaos. And so thank you for the work you're doing. I know your show's been on, what, Aaron, Bill, 10, 15 years so far?
Yeah.
Yeah. The list of shows you've done for 15 years is amazing. Yeah. It is amazing to see.
Kind of a crazy train, huh? You know,
it is.
China and
topics.
You know, all sorts of stuff.
All of those things. But just looking at the people that are in law enforcement and talked on this and related topics, the list of guests is so impressive. I said to Joe, why in the world are you calling me? You've had Bertha Madras, Dave Evans, Laura Steck, all of these people on over the years. And it's just amazing what you're doing. Thank you for your continued work to educate people on these important topics.
Well, from the prosecutor side, like, I don't know, should we, like, march through your career from the beginning, right? We don't want to start with the photography. I guess talking about photography on radio probably is a little frustrating as well. Those pictures are beautiful. Can everyone see them? Oh, yeah, you can. But on your website, they are terrific, and we've linked, you know, just as an aside, we've linked your website and all that, so really they can go look at the pictures, and they are really, really good. But when you were a prosecutor, where were you? I forget. Geographically?
Well, I was born and raised in Idaho. After living different places and going to college and law school, I came back to Boise and started my legal career in the Ada County Prosecutor's Office. I was a deputy prosecutor a long time ago. And it was an amazing experience. I'd lived this great life growing up in Emmett. Wonderful family, grandparents, all kinds of people that loved me, helped raise me when I was a kid. And so I came back to raise a family here. And Ada County Prosecutor's Office, I was immediately thrown into a world that was unlike anything I had experienced before, because all of a sudden I'm exposed to every bad thing that happens. As a new deputy prosecutor, typically aren't given homicide cases. We had kind of simple cases, but within the first 3 weeks of being at the prosecutor's office, I was at my first homicide scene.
Wow.
I was at the homicide scene. I talked to the person who killed another person in the state prison. I went to the autopsy, sat there, stood there by the table as the autopsy was performed, and that introduced me to a world that most people do not understand unless they are in it themselves, or they're able to experience it kind of in cases, professions like mine, other law enforcement people. You start to see the grim realities of people's bad choices and how those choices impact them, their victims, and the community as a whole. And it was a very eye-opening experience. And I loved it from the beginning, but it was, you saw everything that the worst parts of human nature and the consequences of bad choices.
Monty, I would love to know about your the experiences as a federal prosecutor, and could you take a case for us and perhaps do a forensic analysis so that we, as the listening audience, can understand how do you actually get it? You know, does it come in from a law enforcement agency? What kind of investigation do you have to do? And then what happens from beginning to end to prosecution?
Yeah, that's a good question. Of course, a lot of crimes come to a prosecutor's attention. It's a reactive situation. A crime's committed, an investigation's done, reports are created, they're brought to the prosecutor's office, who decides what to do with the information, seeking a complaint or a warrant or a search warrant or an indictment. So in the beginning, a lot of cases just come in. There's a burglary, the reports come in. But in the drug world, and I spent a couple of years doing all the child abuse cases, juvenile delinquency cases, all of those kind of things, mental health cases. But I quickly realized that most of the people in the criminal justice system were there as a result of an underlying substance abuse problem. Hmm. They either did dumb things while under the influence of various drugs, both legal and illegal, or as a result of being in the drug world, they committed crimes to support their habit, sell drugs themselves, do all kinds of terrible things. And it really became obvious to me early in my career that the criminal justice system seemed like this giant banyan tree that you see in exotic places, with a huge trunk and leaves. And after a while, I started to view myself as this little guy on a stepladder at the end of this banyan tree, clipping off a few leaves at a time. But after seeing and hearing defendants and listening to what they did and why they did it, it became obvious that the roots of this tree were substance abuse. And if we wanted to make a real difference, if I wanted to make a real difference, my time would best be served in attacking the roots, which was substance abuse. Because if we could help people make better choices, and they do not do these things, dumb things, because their judgment is impaired, and that's really the source of a lot of bad decisions. Their judgment's impaired, so they do things that hurt themselves and they hurt others. And so I started doing drug cases very early on. And when we started doing drug cases, a lot of times those are reactive. Somebody gets stopped in a car and they've got a pound of cocaine. So there's a case. But a lot of drug cases, especially the more important ones, are done in a proactive manner. You find a witness, you find an informant, you learn about a particular person, more importantly, an organization, a group of people that are doing a lot of bad things, and you start your investigation. So you might have an informant that starts providing information. Along with the informant, you do surveillance, you do other kinds of investigative techniques. A lot of times an officer is introduced in an undercover capacity, so that they're in portraying themselves as one of the drug users, drug dealers. You infiltrate that way, and you gather information. And sometimes the information gathered in a few days, a few weeks. In some of our cases, especially in the federal system, there were cases that were involved years of investigation. One in particular started in Sun Valley Ski Resort area in Idaho. And over the next several years, that took us to Hong Kong 3 times, Thailand 2 times, Fiji.
Wow.
At the end, we seized, $28 million of assets in Europe, all over the United States, property in Fiji, Australia, Singapore, Hong Kong. And these were all Thai marijuana smugglers who started out as surfer dudes in Southern California, in their teenage years and became major marijuana smugglers with boatloads of Thai weed. It's fascinating. So
makes the $50,000 we.
Question.
It makes the $50,000 we just seized in Happy Valley last week on a marijuana grow, like chump change compared to what you have. I think Aaron's going to do something here. Aaron, you going to do something for us?
Oh, we're going to take a break. How are we doing? Yeah, I just changed. All right. I just changed the music because I had a thought. So Bill's trying to rush me. I have a lot of supervision here, Monty. Just so you know, and I just want you to know that just temperamentally, I'm not a fan of supervision. Actually, that's just not my jam. so we're not gonna have any crimes committed here. But if the supervision continues, there may be some dead air. Oh, my God. We'll be right back. Our guest is Monty Stiles, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
.us.
You're fired, Bill.
No.
Yeah.
Don't.
Fired. Perfect lead in, because after they do that, then they meet Monty.
A lot of them did. I met a lot of them, and it was fascinating to investigate these cases, because you would first, in the federal system, the penalties are all based on quantity, and we didn't have time for low-level drug traffickers. If it didn't meet a certain threshold, we didn't pay any attention to it. So we would do these investigations on these major traffickers and organizations. And for a long time, we would gather information about them, watch what they're doing, sometimes do wiretaps, all of these, and learn about how they operated, what they did, how they did it, why they did it, all those things. But ultimately, in the federal system, because the penalties are so heavy, I interviewed most of the defendants I ever prosecuted, because virtually all of them cooperated in the end. So I had this unique situation where I know a lot about people, but ultimately hear it from their own lips, because they would have to come in and there'd be a DEA agent and myself and some others there, and the defendant sitting across the conference table with in handcuffs in an orange jumpsuit and telling us their whole life. And this is what I did. This is how I did it. This is who I did it with. This is where the money went. All of that. And so I had very unique perspective on criminals, why they do these things, how they do them. And that's been very helpful as I segued into the drug prevention world, because that criminal element that continues to exist, especially in this world where we've normalized a lot of drug use that's allowed the black market to thrive. They thrive in a world of legalization and normalization. It's helped me understand how they continue to work to the detriment of kids, families, communities, states, nation.
Monty, here on the West Coast, we find that Jalisco New Generation and the Sinaloa cartels are predominantly involved in marijuana with the Hmong, and then finally the Chinese are moving in and taking over, and that money's going back to New York. In your federal world, you were able to chase that money overseas. Is that correct?
A lot of the money, well, back in the day, our Sun Valley smuggling case, a lot of the money went overseas. It was hidden. and this happens a lot in huge cases. The money's held in offshore banks, can be European banks, could be Caribbean banks, could be Hong Kong. That money goes in cash to places where it can be hidden, kept in numbered accounts. No one knows where it went. It's hard to trace.
Do you have to banks?
Currency. Well, yeah. Ultimately, the goal in any big drug conspiracy investigation is to stop the criminal activity, to seize the drugs, stop the defendants who are doing it, and take away their assets. We learned a long time ago that it does very little good to stop one drug trafficker, put him in jail, because there's too many people to take their place. If you're going to be effective against organized crime, you have to go after organizations. And when you go after organizations, you have to take out the people at the top, as high up as you can, and you have to take away their assets, because their assets are what gives them the power and influence to commit these crimes. So when I worked with the federal government for 26 years, our task force, not only did we have DEA, FBI, U.S. Marshals, one of our key elements was the IRS. One of my best dope cops was an IRS agent because he knew dope and he knew money. And he could trace the money and we could find it, whether it flowed into bank accounts or into real property, homes, boats, cars, planes, whatever it was. And we would take those away through asset forfeiture. And that's very, very, very important. You have to take away the purpose of their criminal activity, which is to make money. You follow the money.
So do you think that...
And oftentimes...
So do you think we're starting to see a bigger influence when we talk about following the money on our voting and money being pushed back on their candidates? And is there a direct...
Oh, goodness. I could talk for hours about that. The influence of pot money in politics is frightening. These people, the drug traffickers themselves, have so much money. I mean, dope equals money. And so a lot of dope means a lot of money. And that money is used to do a lot of things. And one of it is to influence people who make policies and laws and voters. As drugs have been legalized in various states, the so-called legit pot industry, as it's grown in wealth and power, has used that to lobby, to fund voter initiatives in which voters are overwhelmed with propaganda because our side, the drug prevention side, the law enforcement side, we don't have any money to counter multi-million dollar campaigns that tell people, that tell voters that this is a great idea, that it's all going to be rainbows and unicorns if we just legalize pot. And so state after state falls to this nonsense. And as it does, the pot industry grows stronger with more wealth. They use that to fund more campaigns, to push further for legalization, greater legalization, legalization of other drugs. And they do a lot of lobbying, and they do a lot of donations. And that has an impact on government.
So I'm going to wheel you back a little bit, because we do want to touch on hemp too. But from what I have researched, a lot of the like the Delta 8 and the Delta 10, because they don't fall in quite the same category as Delta 9, because it's supposedly less THC. But what we're seeing is their derivatives being sold everywhere because there are no controls on that. So we're seeing these type of derivatives popping up in gas stations and vape shops and all easily accessible to our youth.
Yeah, you're exactly right. we opened up a Pandora's box years ago. It started in some respects with farm organization demanding that they be able to grow this crop called hemp, which was it was a Trojan horse from the very beginning. That started a mess. One of the biggest tragedies in American drug policy was the passage of the Farm Bill, which legalized the growing of hemp with less than 0.3% THC. There is no way to regulate that. There is no way. It is an uncontrolled industry that is sold everywhere. As predicted, the hemp industry has produced all of these variations of THC that weren't even known about in the beginning, and they show up in all kinds of products, and it's out of control. And I often tell people that even in states where they claim to regulate this stuff, it's like having one park ranger for the entire Yellowstone National Park. It is not enough. It is no regulation. It's the perception or the deception of regulation that does not happen. And thankfully, this mess is finally getting the attention of people in Washington and other states where they're saying, we can't have this happening anymore. It's out of control. And that's all a product of buying into the original story that this wasn't a big deal, that it would be okay, that we could control it, we could regulate it. It was never going to happen.
Well,
it is now so out of control and largely facilitated by criminalizations, not just so-called legit or supposedly regulated by states.
Well, I hear from people all the time that if we... and I guess maybe we should do this on the backside of the break, but, you know, time to mull it over, I suppose. You know, there is always this, I don't know, drumbeat that the war on drugs was a failure, that if we just legalized everything, so there's that, so definitely not going to drag you down that rabbit hole. But if there was no prosecution of marijuana, there was no, you know, you could only have 12 plants, you can, you know, if there wasn't all this stuff and you could sell it, it would be, you know, legal and it would be so much less money and all of that. And that we have not seen that happen. And I guess I'm curious to know, when this was all being proposed, what were people in your kind of position, right? You're one facet of it, but the law enforcement, the prosecutors, all that. I'm curious what the lobbying effort was and I guess what you guys anticipated, and then what was the change in crime from like before to after, and where's the trajectory now, even though you're out of that industry? So you have 2 minutes to mull that over, Mounty. You can play the Jeopardy music for yourself or listen to the commercial. Either way, we will come back with our guest, Mounty Stiles, to unravel that whole sweater I just built for you. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at, are you ready, Bill?
I'm ready.
We the People Radio.
.us.
That's called a pregnant pause.
Almost got fired again.
When all of a sudden this policeman caught me unaware. He said, is your name Pedro? I said, yeah, I guess so. He said, then come with me, because you're the man we've been looking for. I said, hey, man, I've been framed. Hey, no, really, man, I was framed. I never do nothing wrong, man. But every time I get the plane, I've been framed.
Gonna get me some. I'm here.
we forgot to warn you that all the music is inappropriate and sort of silly. But I'm saving Cameron's favorite song for next hour.
I love it.
And he knows exactly what I'm talking about. And I'll let you know ahead of time, Monty, but then you're going to get a little eye into old Officer Joe there and his musical situation here. So, okay, from your vantage point, because we know what we saw in our communities. We see people, you know, just basically sprawled all over the place like boneless chickens, you know, all over the grass, all over the streets, all over everywhere, that are all high or whatever they are. And it really, really took off after this whole legalization here. But you're in a different state. You had a different vantage point. What did you think was going to happen, and then what did you see?
Well, as the head of the Federal Drug Task Force, when all of this started happening, I was first shocked that any state would be suckered into the idea that the pot legalizers promoted, which was, if we legalize, it will take it away from kids. They won't have access to it because it'll all be regulated.
Right.
And it will stop organized crime. It will do away with drug dealers. And I thought, no, that's too dumb for anybody to buy into.
Certainly no one would fall for that.
That's too dumb. And over the years, as state after state has fallen for this thing, it was important for me and others to figure out why. And I'll tell you exactly why. It's because the pot lobbyists, the pot industry, the pot promoters had money. It started with pro-pot billionaires that invested millions and millions into every state campaign, as these pot lobbying organizations grew in power and strength, they started funding these state-run campaigns. And as then the so-called legit pot industry grew in power and wealth, they began funding these campaigns that are overwhelmingly in favor of lies that are told to the public, with very little response on the other side. Government has done a terrible job of educating people about the consequences of legalization.
Reinforce what you're saying, Trump just attended a fundraising dinner in New Jersey that was $1 million a plate, and guess who was sponsoring it? It was the pot industry, and he is considering lowering it from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3. So they're hard at work.
Yeah, I know.
Spending money.
So just to give you an idea, I've looked at every state. For example, the western states. Of the western states, and I think there was 7 or 8 that I looked at, just looking at the public records of funding, the pot industry, pot lobbying organizations, have invested since 1996 when California went down, have invested $100 million to convince voters to legalize pot in 8 western states. $100 million. You think about a state like Idaho. If they come in and they put in $1 million or $2, how much money do you think we could raise to fight that? There's no drug education organizations, there's no state agency that can come up with $1 million to counter a campaign like that. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, in Idaho, more than a decade ago, we had legislative leaders, we had a governor who got dialed in on this issue. They were educated, and when this first hit, they said, no, it's not going to happen here. Not happening here. California can do whatever they want. Oregon can go nuts. Washington could go nuts. Colorado can do stupid things. We are not doing that here. And we have more than a decade of our leaders and other groups fighting this so that kind of influence has never taken hold. I don't know why other states didn't do it the same way, but they have not. We have great leadership here. They know the facts, and when somebody comes in and says, oh, this is going to cause this to happen, this is going to have this benefit, they say, baloney, we know better, not happening here. And as a result, the people on the pot side view Idaho as the most most antagonistic of all states towards legalization. We're the most hostile state in America for legalization. And that's because people paid attention from the very beginning. We learned from the mistakes of others. We saw that the promises of the pot world were untrue. They were lies. They were always lies. And we made decisions and policies and laws that were consistent with the facts, not the lies.
And Monty, I invite all of the listeners to look at one of the documentaries out of Idaho called Smokescreen. It's excellent. And
It's on our site.
It's on our page. Okay, great.
Yeah, that's
Chronic
good.
Chronic State is the one we created. It was the first
one. Oh, yeah.
One.
Remember that
and
one?
Chronic State, too. Yeah. Yep.
That was good, too. Yeah.
It was excellent. And yep. it was an example of the kind of things we were doing to educate our governmental leaders and our public so they wouldn't be persuaded to join this nonsense. And thank goodness it's continued. We just have great people here. And well, I feel bad. We look at what's going on in other places and you think the chaos that's been created, for what end? What benefit has this done to any child, any family, any community? You guys are a prime example of what's happening to your beautiful forests and public lands and
private land. Our biggest problem is private property these days. Because see, once they legalize it, you're looking at a $500 fine. Well, if you can make millions, billions, do the math. Why wouldn't you risk the big $500 compliance fine? It's not that big a deal.
Exactly. So here's something from the criminal investigation world. This is what I know.
Okay.
The pot legalization allowed criminal organizations to literally hide in plain sight. There's so much going on, you can't distinguish the good or the bad guys. They hide in plain sight. They are emboldened by legalization. It allows them to commit more crimes and hurt more people. And my goal as a prosecutor never was just to put people in jail. My goal was to get drugs out of the communities. And I wanted people to not use drugs, to make good choices. Wasn't any fun putting people in jail. I'd much rather people make good choices, live good lives, and not hurt people. But they do. And so they have to be stopped. And when they're not stopped, they do it more. And that's what's happening in places like your beautiful state.
So the idea that, federally, if we just walked away from it and just opened the doors, that would free up law enforcement to work. See, this, I hear this all the time.
Yeah.
They would be able to work on
real
crimes. What? You've heard that too? Oh my God, it's not just me. Yeah, you'd be able to work on
real
crimes.
But drugs are not real crimes.
Yeah. So when you get back to the people laying in the street, the cartels, the criminal organizations that deal in pot are the same people that sell fentanyl.
Yep.
The legalization of pot have allowed them to grow their pot industry, their pot business, which allows them to bring in more fentanyl. In fact, if anything, one weird thing happened years ago when the cartels found themselves in competition with states who are suddenly becoming drug dealers themselves by allowing the sale and then collecting the drug proceeds in the form of taxes. The cartels found themselves competing with states. Guess what they did? They turned their attention to fentanyl. They actually decided that well, if the state's going to compete with us in marijuana, we're going to come into these other things. It increased the amount of fentanyl coming in. And then, ironically, later, the cartels were able to come back into the marijuana world and flourish in all of those worlds. So our states have increased fentanyl problems simply because we've allowed these cartels to get out of control. And it's got to stop.
From a prosecutor...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, as a prosecutor, you know, you started with, you prosecuted all these cases, and when you sort of drilled down on them, there was an underlying drug problem. Go back to that for us just for a minute, and how, because we were told as kids, you know, in the 60s or whatever, yes, we're old, that marijuana was a gateway drug. And, of course, our parents didn't know anything, so we all laughed, but we weren't really smoking pot for the most part because it wasn't really available. And so we didn't know, but we figured our parents didn't know anything because we didn't know anything. But what is the current, you know, that you've seen in the last, like with your career, is that the gateway drug or do they start with other stuff? Because I can't imagine you'd, like, the first thing you would ever try is, like, stick a needle in your arm or something bizarre like that.
Yeah. Yeah, gateway drug is a term that's used sometimes not correctly. Anything can be a gateway to further drug use. Alcohol, tobacco, vaping, certainly marijuana. The gateway theory is that if you start down one road, it's going to lead to other behavior. The best way to explain it, I mean, watch this with thousands of people, is that when you start to consume something that is addictive or impairs your judgment, it leads to other things. Because impaired judgment leads to poor choices. A common thing in the world of kids, they're around kids that smoke weed. So they smoke a little bit of weed. It doesn't make them crazy. They're not addicted. But they're around people that also have access to other drugs often. And so when you're high and you feel bulletproof and immortal and someone hands you a pill or some powder or something else and they say, hey, this is even better, your brain's not working. People that are impaired do dumb things. They drive. They commit theft. They do other bad things. It leads to bad choices. And bad choices are the fundamental thing that I worry the most about. That's why I got into drug prevention, drug education, which I'm very, very passionate about. Because if we don't help our youth make good choices, and by doing that, we have to model good choices ourselves. If we don't start to do more in that area, where nothing we do, no law, no policy we ever make will make a difference, because it boils down to helping people make good choices for their own lives and everyone around them.
But if we can't...
I love drug education.
Yeah, but we need to get the adults and the leaders in our community to understand that, and that's where the drug money stops us, because we cannot get the people that have the power to make those decisions to see that we need to be making better choices for our youth. We need to be setting that example and not just having our hand out for the dollars.
Yeah. If the kids in your community are being told by their leaders that drugs are not harmful, in fact, there may be even medicine, and even if they're not either one of those, we can make money by doing it. What chance do our kids have?
Let's put a store on every corner so that we can tell everybody that it's perfectly safe and, well, it's legal. Mm,
it's legal.
It's legal, so what's the problem?
And our kids deserve better. Our kids deserve better. And frankly, if you have politicians making choices, money over kids and money over families, they need to be exposed. And that's one of the brilliant things that our leaders here, and I don't know, do, is when somebody comes up with a dumb idea, and they want to do something that's counterproductive to what we've prevented for more than a decade, they get exposed.
Nice.
Basically, hey.
We have to take a really quick break, Monty, and then we're going to come back because you're a hostage for the second hour. Spoiler alert. You're listening to We the People. We're coming back with Monty Stiles on the back of this. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's all going to pot, whether we like it or not. The best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and we're all gonna miss it a lot. All the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee, just couldn't hit the spot. Got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend. It's all going to pot. I got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend. Look, it's all going to pot.
Welcome to the second hour of People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
And, you know, apparently we've stopped screwing around now. We've been talking about drugs for a whole hour. It's very sobering, oddly enough, chatting about drugs. There just is a lot to this, which is why we keep doing this, because honestly...
Cross-education, huh?
Yeah, I mean, pick what you... You know, honestly, I think every topic we do they're all kind of like bicycle wheels, right? You've got all the spokes. So pick the spoke you care about or the spokes you care about. So I guess if you don't care about grown-ups, so if it's okay if they lay all over the street and ruin their lives, that's one thing. You can say they're all over 18, they made their own choice. Okay, so scribble that off as a motivator for you. Kids, maybe you don't have any kids, so you don't really think a lot about kids. You care, but, you know, they have parents, so that's their parents' job, so we scribble that off. Don't work in school, so you don't really have anything that way. You're not in law enforcement, so you're not going to contact it that way. So you start kind of going through the things that I think a lot of people feel very disconnected about. You know, I heard somebody who had cancer, so they used marijuana and it helped them. And it's like, yeah, there's super no medical evidence about that. But anyway, whether they did or they didn't. But for every single person who would be listening to this or, you know, so you'd be talking to about this, it's coming for their wallet. So let's just say at the end of the day, this is going to cost you a fortune. So maybe you could care about that because nobody's getting out of that. We all pay taxes. I don't care if it's just sales tax. Maybe you don't have an income tax obligation these days. A lot of other of us do. And a ton of that money is going to warehouse people either in prison, hospitals, in shelters. We spend inordinate amounts of money on the homeless problem. And yet, like up in Wairika, for instance, a town with 7,700 people, I think it is, they have a homeless deal that now has 32 beds. Regularly, you have 20 that are filled. They dispersed their big homeless camp up there, so they figured, hey, they'll go from there to the shelter thing. They've actually got two of them. The one has 32 beds. There's only 20 filled. I was up there yesterday. People wandering all over the place. Now they're just wandering. So
they don't want to follow the rules.
We had a guy, so, okay, you don't care about your wallet. How about your own personal safety? So forget the crime. Maybe you don't care about the crime. You're not going to go out at night. So when the zombies come out, you won't be out there. This show is aired at 12 o'clock on Sunday afternoons, right? If you're listening to this on the archive, you might not know that. So at 11:45, well, actually more like 11:50 when we come racing in, come rolling down a major city street with three lanes to a stoplight that turns green, which usually means go. And a guy with, like, you know, he's almost like the cartoon character with the little knapsack on his back, you know, over his shoulder, little sack of stuff slung over his shoulder. He marches right out in front of the cars, lane by lane by lane. And the third lane, a van missed him by a hair. Just didn't see him. He'd pop out in front of the next car, and then here come another guy. You're like, oh, no, he doesn't see it. Whoosh. So this is waiting for you. Like around every corner. It is sucking us all in, actually. Like, nobody's getting out of this without being involved.
Well, and I think I get very frustrated when people, well, it doesn't affect me.
Yeah.
That's their excuse. But why would you want to wait till it affects you personally or a loved one before you want to get on the bandwagon and make a difference?
But pick a spoke on the wheel, right?
Yeah.
It's like here just coming to do a radio program, driving down a normal street. We weren't in a ghetto of any kind. We just drove by the donut store, for heaven's sakes. And the fire department, actually. The fire department was right there. That actually would have been helpful. And here comes a guy, just marches out in the road, and that is not the first time I've seen it. And I'm positive that Monty and Officer Joe, from a law enforcement and prosecutor standpoint, could verify that these guys make not just bad decisions to do drugs, but things that ultimately get them killed. I don't know. What do you think about that, Monty?
So, Aaron, you lay out a very plain scenario. People, well, if you don't care about this, you should care about this. And one of the most effective ways to educate people on why they should care about drug policies and laws. At the bottom line, the question is always, what happens to kids when we have a society that has normalized, increased the use of any kind of mind-altering substance? Judgment-impairing substance. How are kids affected? And I think the thing that compelled me, took me early in my career into the drug education world, which I, within a few years, being prosecutor, is the absolute knowledge of what kids face, the things that happen to kids because of the bad choices of adults. I've been in homes, certain of them have, the front lawn is scattered, broken tricycles, the backyard and swings.
We're getting some interruption on your line, Monty. You're in a bad spot.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. We were having you fade in and out, and I figured.
Monty, we need you to put the tin foil back on your head, please.
We all have our hats on. Come on.
tell me if this is any better. I was talking about the number of times
it's lovely.
You go see a meth house where guys with hazmat suits are going in. Into a home, and they're going in with hazmat suits. Things they're not allowed to go in without hazmat suits. And there's little kids padding around the house in dirty diapers and bare feet, food in these places. And the concept of drug endangered children is something everybody should care about. What's happening to little kids whose parents that are using any kind of mind-altering drugs, the number one thing. And politicians that don't view that as the number one thing to protect in society is children, we need to replace those people. If people don't care about children, I don't know how you help them. But I often think in the world of the environment, people need to chain themselves to a redwood tree.
Yeah.
Where are they now when our natural forests are being decimated by carbon? Where are they? The entire Northwest lumber industry got taken because spotted owls were being bothered. But now we have cartels destroying habitat at such an alarming rate, and the pesticides and all the stuff that Officer Joe knows very much about. Those things are happening, and they need to be asked, if you care about the environment, what do you think about this?
Yeah, well,
if you care about wildlife, what about this?
With the marijuana thing, I always, 100% of the time, if I speak about it, I take the pictures of all the dogs they cook and eat up in the groves north of us, and the pictures are horrible. I start with that. I'm like, okay, you don't care about drugs, you don't care about crime, you don't live in this county, you don't, okay, cross off all those things you might not care about. Maybe you don't even care if it's costing you a fortune because the eradication and all that, these are forever chemicals, they're going into your water table, you're going to glow in the dark eventually, still not in. How about dogs? What do you think about dogs? I did this to a guy who worked for National Marine Fisheries. And he's like, well, I don't care about that. And it, literally, this was our conversation. I go, what about this? And he's like, well, I don't care about that. And I thought, this is kind of fun in a frustrating sort of way. And I was busy on my phone pulling up the picture, the most gory picture I had of a dog that was in a fire pit. And I said, how do you feel about dogs? He goes, my dog is my best friend. And I was all, shazam. I was like, here you go. This is what they do to dogs up where I'm talking about. And I thought we were eating dinner, too. Is it a dinner? I'm like, I just ruined this guy's whole dinner. This is like the best day of my life. And he's like, oh, my God. You know? So there's something to hate for everybody, honestly. But the animals, and yeah, where's PETA? We say this all the time. Like, where's PETA?
Monty, that document
well,
I sent.
One of the advantages.
The document I sent you, the pot dogs dying for your high, that's available for anybody. They can get it. Just email notmeofficer@gmail.com. All one word. I'll send them the document. It's we went into the grows. We rescued some dogs. We followed a rescue that all they do is rescue pot dogs. And it's disgusting. And when we went to the state of California, the state of California could have cared less. The ASPCA, PETA, well, yeah, we don't do pot. We don't do anything with pot. We can't do anything about that. And people don't realize that when you say ecosystem, it's more than just the plants. It's all the animals. There are no animals.
Yeah, there's no deer or anything.
There's no
left
deer.
Up there.
There's no rabbits. There's no birds. They've all been poisoned out. And now, unfortunately, now we're seeing human beings actually being sickened. And when we have ads going on, like, for example, in our community, there's one pot store that puts out an ad called Your Fresh Farm to Table Marijuana. You know, Monty, I've never seen one of them say, hey, we're going to open our doors and let the public come in and see all of our growing operations, and we're going to provide them with all those lab reports that have been, you know, actually given by a lab that you know, like Anresco's, a legitimate lab company. Because legitimate lab companies in California show that over 80% of the products are now contaminated, including in the legal market. But you never hear anything about that. Over to you,
well,
Monty.
People in California and elsewhere get really excited about, you know, whether a certain red dye is in their food. But
Skittles.
Where's the alarm over people smoking pesticides? That pesticides that are banned in the United States. We can't even use it for agricultural purposes, but they're smuggled into the country and sprayed all over the pot that people then smoke into their lungs. It's the craziest thing. But all of this comes back to people need to be educated, and politicians who support and encourage this kind of activity need to be outed. They need to be exposed for foolish behavior and foolish ideas that hurt kids, families, communities. Those three things we need to talk about: kids, families, and communities. How do our choices, our policy choices, our law choices impact those three things? And if it's not helping, the people that are making those laws and policies need to be removed and replaced with people who care about kids, families, and communities. We have to educate people better. We're not doing it. We don't do enough of it. There are people like Kathy and Officer Joe and you guys doing this show, educate people every day. But where's government's huge campaigns to educate people about this? It's not happening, and things have to change. We have to do more.
Yeah. Well, so we're, you know, a minute out. We've got to take a little break, so we may not be able to cram this all in. But let's go back on the whole hemp thing, because it seems odd to me that in some of our communities we have decided not to have commercial growing because somehow somebody figured out that wasn't going to work. But then there's a, like, let's revisit hemp. Hemp is a harmless crop. Like, let's bring that in, and it's not the same, and that'd be a good thing. So, like, what would you say to that, for instance? if it were up to you.
Well, if the hemp industry is producing mind-altering drugs that are illegal and hurt people, somebody's got to call that out, and it has to be loud. And politicians that promote that and allow that to happen need to be exposed. And you guys have Board of Commissioners, from what I know, they've been very, very courageous and smart in calling out the environmental devastation, creating states of emergency, asking for state help, asking for federal help because of what's going on. You guys have been holding the line, calling out the emergency. It's awesome.
I wish I had the letter to.
I wish I had the letter for that county
when they sent it to the state. The federal EPA said, yeah, we're coming and helping you. They sent it to the state and said, we need to declare a state of emergency. You should see the letter. The state wrote back. You have to almost like read it in a funny voice just to keep yourself from getting really super angry. But it was all about, we're doing everything we can, and we're partnering with you, and we've collaborated and all this stuff. And the state really is just abdicating. A lot of their enforcement, some
it's
of their,
nonsense.
Yeah. Excuse me.
And some of our local leaders. We had a strong board here locally in this county, but lately it's changing, and so we're having to do more education. And we're going to have to when these people come up for the only way you can get them is when they come up for office. You have to expose them so that the public knows that they're in bed with the marijuana industry.
But we have to explain to the public.
Yeah, we have to explain to the public.
Who most of them don't interact with anything that has anything to do with this, and a lot of them don't know what they're looking at. No.
You talked to 99% of the public today, Monty. What goes on in a marijuana grow? And they think it's like something you see on a farm. They don't realize that $1,000 per plant, they're going to pour anything they can on it to keep it alive because it's just money. It's not marijuana per se. It's just money.
It's just money.
When people talk about something, the evidence that education works, why we know education works, and in the ways it works to change public attitudes and opinions,
Monty has been overtaken by a snowstorm, apparently, in Idaho. So it must be unseasonably cool in Idaho. We have to work on our connection. And, hey, look at that. It's time for a break. And we're going to play Officer Joe's favorite song. Are you ready?
Go for it.
Okay. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I was going to go to work, but then I got high. Ooh, I just got a new promotion, but I got high. Now I'm selling dope, and I know why. Cause I got high, because I got high, because I got high. La da 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 da. I was gonna go to court before I got high. Ooh, I was gonna pay my child support, but then I.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow! I feel nice. The sugar and spice. I feel nice.
Officer Joe's fired now. Tell you what, we're going to have to change the show to open mic faux pas. Do people know how to spell
take
faux
two.
Pas?
Take two, cut, cut.
I was talking to the snowplow operator in Idaho, and he's plowed out Monty, and Monty's back.
Monty's back. Sans snow.
I moved location, so hopefully this is better.
Ooh, we love it. Very nice. No more.
Good.
Yeah, you were the white noise king there for a minute. Okay, so I don't know where we were. What were we talking about?
I
got caught up in the snowstorm.
I was asking if I was asking if we could talk for a minute about the idea of why education works, how we know that education works, and why we should do more of it. Because when a lot of times I give presentations, and my job is to do law enforcement training or talk to a corporation or talk to a drug prevention group, and we talk about the things that are wrong, the things that we see that need to be changed. And people sometimes get the idea that it's so overwhelming, we can't work our way out of this. We can't educate enough people to change behavior. And I always like to help people think about why we know that prevention and education works. They do work. And here's a couple of examples. You think back to the time when I was a kid. Lots of people smoked. All the celebrities smoked. Your parents smoked. Everybody smoked. Cigarettes were a big deal. The tobacco industry got away with using doctors to promote cigarettes. It's healthy. It's good for you. They used Santa Claus. They used politicians. They used babies to sell cigarettes in their advertising. And then it became more sophisticated with Joe Camel and the Marlboro Man and on and on. Well, what happened? At some point, we realized that it was killing people, and the tobacco companies were lying to us. And so we started a campaign. That campaign has dramatically changed the amount of people smoking cigarettes today. We have changed behavior by educating. And that's not the only example. You think about the idea of designated drivers. That was an idea that a Harvard law professor had that was introduced on the popular TV shows like Cheers and Friends,
really?
The idea of designated drivers, the idea of recycling. We didn't have three different colored cans in our house when I was a kid.
True.
Recycling, littering, adopt the highway, forest fire prevention with Smokey the Bear.
Seatbelts.
Adopt the pet. The best one is seatbelts. Seatbelts. Think about this. My parents put five of us kids in the sedan and drove to Disneyland from Idaho. We didn't know what a seatbelt was, and that was the world then. Today, if I get in my car with my grandkids in the back and I don't put on my seatbelt, what do you think happens? Grandpa! And Riker and crew are listening right now, so I want to shout out to them. Grandpa, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You can't drive without your seatbelt because it's been ingrained in their little brains that that's how people act. We have done that through education.
Yeah,
the government, other people need to think about how we've done that in the past. And one of the most hilarious, you talk about liberal humor, one of the most hilarious evidences that we can change people's behavior is when you see people with a glove and a little baggie at the park as they're following their dog around, picking stuff up behind the dog. We've trained humans to do that because if they don't do that, they will be shunned by their neighbors.
Yeah.
So we have the ability to change behaviors, attitudes, and actions when we choose to do so. And there's very few things that demand, require, that we should expect then to help people make better choices about what they put into their brains and bodies so that we can raise healthy, happy, safe kids, families, create better communities.
Monty, I have a question from one of our listeners, and he wants to know, how will the Safer Banking Act help hide marijuana money?
Goodness. So under federal law, all money that's derived from selling pot, whether legal or illegal, is considered drug proceeds. It's all forfeitable.
Mm.
No one has the right to drug proceeds. So money going into banks is dope money. In the old days, that's all forfeitable. If you allow the pot industry to use the banking system, it will greatly increase their ability to deal with all of this money that they have. It will embolden all of them. It will help all of them. It will enrich the banks. So you have banks that are clamoring to be able to take pot money because that's a lot of money that they want. But it's a terrible, terrible idea. It's just one more thing along the slippery slope to make it easier and easier for the pot industry to basically become and exceed big tobacco, big alcohol.
But
it's the pot industry is big, is tobacco industry on steroids.
But isn't
go ahead.
Isn't the pot industry, I've heard stories of them walking into the tax collector's office, for instance, if they withhold taxes on their employees' wages and they walk in with bags of money to pay their taxes. Isn't that a roundabout way?
Sure they do.
A roundabout way of using the banking system?
Sure they do. And that money they bring in is drunk. It's all go under federal. Whether it's, and so they come in.
Oh, Monty, I think it's snowed.
The blizzard is coming
The blizzard's back in Idaho.
It's happening again?
No, that was pretty good, though. Yeah. It's almost like when, you know, you tell them they can't hear them, and then it's just like my conversations with Officer Joe on the cell phone, actually.
I'm sorry.
Vaguely reminiscent.
So the bags of money, it's all drug proceeds, and so if the state says, oh, these are taxes, it doesn't change the nature of the thing. You can't call it something else, and it is something else. It's still drug proceeds. So, yeah, the Banking Act thing is a terrible idea.
When you seize drug money, Monty, in your career, what actually happens to it in the end? Where does it go? Does it go into some, like, general fund and get, you know, buys lollipops? Or what? Where does that money actually go?
It's a very good question. So when you're doing investigations and you drugs off the street, put people in jail that deserve to be so that they don't create addict problems elsewhere. It's the drug traffickers that do that. And take away their assets. Assets that are used for good purposes. Drug case prevention. Some of it goes to law enforcement. So instead of taking taxpayer money to enforce other laws and to protect the public, they use the drug proceeds, the drug dealer's proceeds, to do those things. So it actually is a cost savings to taxpayers because we take away the drug dealer's proceeds. And finally, the asset forfeiture takes away a source of their power, and that helps take out organized crime. Because forfeitures are a wonderful tool that law enforcement uses that help a lot of things in the community, including drug prevention, drug treatment, all of those kind of things.
It takes years, though, doesn't it, Monty? Really? I mean, you take the asset, it goes to a forfeiture hearing, goes to a judge, gets appealed, and it's several years before we actually can seize the money for real or take the money for real.
That's sometimes true, and it depends on your state law. But, for example, if somebody's taken off on the highway with 10 pounds of a pot or cocaine in their trunk and they have $100,000 in cash, that kind of case can be litigated very quickly. If it's complicated like Hong Kong bank accounts and resort property in Fiji, like in Liechtenstein bank accounts, yeah, it takes a long, long time.
We took that $50,000 last week here, and but the difference is that those people will never show up. There will be no court hearing. The illegal alien Mexicans are gone. They're not going to come in and say, where's my money? Where are all my guns? We took 20 guns out of a grow last week that were all high-dollar hunting rifles. Those will all come back taken in a burglary. And even though we didn't catch any suspects, maybe the owners of those guns are going to get them back. And that's a common thing that we find in all these illegal grows is firearms and counter-surveillance. We're seeing a lot of counter-surveillance going on now in the illegal grows and booby traps. So that's an issue that local law enforcement has to deal with. Why do you think, Monty, why do you think the federal government hasn't become involved in states that have legalized marijuana? Any thoughts on that? Because it doesn't seem like the Fed spends any time.
The Feds could have kept this from happening from the get-go. they never needed to allow. And the people say the drug wars failed. The drug war didn't fail. We never fought it. And when I say we didn't fight it, a real war means you look for victory. And the victory is not putting a bunch of people in prison. The victory is getting dope off the street. The victory is getting people to make choices that are good for their lives and their families and their kids. That's the victory. We've never fought that war to the degree necessary to win. And the feds, they abdicate. They basically said, we're not going to enforce certain federal laws. They're going to be on the books. We're not going to change them, but we're not going to enforce them. Where has that been beneficial in America? Was that beneficial on the border? Was that beneficial in other areas where we just ignore laws? If we pick and choose the laws, it's one thing to have a debate and change laws. It's an entirely different one to say, we have laws that we're not going to enforce. That causes lack of respect for laws and for a lot of bad things to happen. And frankly, that's one of the reasons I eventually left the U.S. Attorney's Office and went into full-time drug prevention, is I couldn't handle the fact that my own agency, my own department, decided to enforce some laws and not others. I saw it as a great tragedy. Fortunately, my career took a turn where I could spend almost all of my time teaching kids, helping corporations, helping government agencies, helping the public understand these issues in a way that I understand from 30 years of involvement in it, and hopefully provide some solutions in communities where changes could be made. And I love it. I love it. There's nothing better than having a group of kids talking about youth leadership and natural highs. We haven't talked anything about photography, but I find nature and the outdoors as the perfect anecdote to all of the nonsense that the drug culture offers. It's something that it's so wonderful. I love talking to kids about those things because finding natural highs in the world. The world has an infinite number of interesting things to do and see and experience. And the drug culture is nothing compared to that. So opening people's eyes, especially kids, to those opportunities is one of my most fun things. And I do that partly through photography because I just love the outdoors.
Well, and now people have phones with cameras, so even if you don't have the ability, back in the olden days, you had to be able to buy film and process it, and you had all that stuff. And Bill just found his camera that he had when he was like in his 20s. He found it up at his mom's house. She's she's 95 and she's moving. And Bill's like, "Hey, whose camera is this?" She's like, "I don't know. I think it was your dad's."
Oh,
he's like, "Wait, I recognize the strap. It still has film in it." We're going to learn about old Bill here pretty soon. Like, what was Bill doing back in the day?
You know, I'm Joe Friday. I just want the facts, Monty. So I'm going to bring you back. I'm going to bring you back to...
Oh, fun killer. Good. No, it's time for a break. Fun killer.
Okay.
You're not the boss of that.
Okay. Well, you can take a break. Monty, okay. When you come back, will you finish your story about Sun Valley, your prosecution, whatever happened with it? I want to know what happened with that case. And then we can talk about the government. It thinks red dye is important, but they don't think marijuana is important.
It's Skittles. Got to outlaw Skittles.
Okay.
They're killing us, right?
Okay. All right.
And then, Monty, you can just talk about whatever you want.
Yeah.
You're in a blizzard, okay. So you do whatever you want.
Am I still in the blizzard?
No, but we're not going to be done teasing you about it. I mean, it's good fun. All right.
Give me some music, Aaron.
You're listening to We the People. I have a two-parter on the music for you this time, so it's a story. You better listen up. You can find us at We the People Radio.
.us.
Name of this song is The Wildwood Flower. Now, The Wildwood Flower is an old country classic. It's gained a whole new popularity. The song isn't any more popular, but the flower's doing real good. Wildwood flower grew wild on the farm, and we never knowed what it was called. Some said it's a flower and some said it's a weed. I didn't give it much thought. One day I was out there talking to my brother and I reached down for a weed to chew on. Things got fuzzy and things got blurry and then everything was gone. Didn't know what happened, but I knew it beat the hell out of Smith and Burley. Smoking them wildwood flowers got to be a habit. We never seen no harm. Oh, we thought it was kind of handy. Take a trip and never leave the farm. They go puff that wildwood weed. Next thing you know, you're just wandering around behind the little animals. All good things got to come to an end. It's the same with the wildwood weeds. One day a fella from Washington come by and spied them and turned white as a sheet. And he dug and he burned and he burned and he dug and he killed all our cute little weeds. And then he drove away. We just smiled and waved, sitting there on that sack of seeds.
That was Jim Stafford, just in case you want to go look that up and play it for yourself. It's called Wildwood Weed. It's a classic. So,
you guys have interesting music choices.
Don't we? And you know, if we were doing some other topic, we'd have interesting choices for that, too. Because, you know, that's part of the fun.
Sure you do. You guys are pros.
Well, we're just really, you know, screwing around. But, you know, bottom line is, though, Monty, really, if you're going to talk about serious topics and then you're going to just, you know, just hammer at people for 2 hours on a serious topic, nobody hears that. I mean, I don't listen to that. Who wants to listen to that? What a drag. But you can learn stuff. I mean, if people have a pretty good time and you squeeze some information in there, it's not a bad thing. We're just going to put old Officer Joe in a box there and let you do whatever you want. What do you want to do, Monty? What do you want to talk about here at the end?
Well,
your call.
I started doing drug talks 30 years ago. Started with maybe a Boy Scout troop, a class at a school, a church group, whatever. It eventually became all school assemblies and then later bigger events. And I've had the blessing of speaking at state, regional, national conferences. And I learned a long time ago that if you just preach to people about the bad drugs and what they do, that at the end, I would finish a talk, and I felt like I gave them good information, but it was all bad information, and it was depressing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't give them something good to end with. And so years ago, after 30 years in law enforcement, I woke up one day and realized that my worldview was kind of dark. I'd seen so many things, so many images in my brain, my memory of bad things that I'd seen, that my view of the world had changed. I was suspicious of people. That was kind of dark, and I realized I had to do something to change the way my brain was working. And so I decided I needed a hobby. And the hobby I picked was, because I liked the outdoors anyway, was photography. I got a cheap little film camera, started taking pictures. When I did that, something changed in my brain. When I had a camera in my hand, looking through the lens of a camera, what I was looking for was everything that was beautiful, unique, inspiring, awesome. And so with the camera in my hand, it changed my perspective. And as I took more and more pictures and learned how to make pictures better, capture pictures better, I got more and more interested in that. I ultimately got really into wildlife photography. It changed me. It opened up my world from this kind of hunched over, dark mood of, oh, the world is terrible, to experiencing everything that's wonderful about life again. In a way, it was like I rediscovered this little child in me that I remember being a child on the farm growing up. Everything was awesome. Everything was new. And I rediscovered that childlike joy in my life. And so now, whenever I give a presentation, I give people the information and here's what's going on. But on the flip side, look at this. And I start showing pictures of all the things I've seen, from little things to big sunsets to wildlife. And it's, I said, here is the world we live in. The opportunities, the experiences, the creatures, the people, the beauty of it all. It's infinitely awesome and infinitely interesting, way better than anything the drug culture can offer. And now, when I give presentations, the ability to turn all of that darkness around to the light, to the world, to the things that are good in life, it gives me an opportunity to share a vision of where people can go that's way better than anything a drug can bring them. And I love doing that. I love doing that with kids. I love doing that with adults. The idea of rediscovering joy. My journey had a lot of dark moments, not of my own making, but of things I had to see, I had to deal with. But the journey in my later life that allows me now to provide some, hopefully some inspiration, some ideas on how to make the world a better place is so, so rewarding to me. It's just a wonderful opportunity. I love to do it. And I love to share information with people like you that are making a difference in the world, that are fighting the battle every day and educating the public. It's awesome.
Well, you've kind of hit on, hit on that, because without, when we were kids, we had, paper routes. I lived in the East, so we were either shoveling or raking. So we had stuff to do, but a lot of our younger people growing up, we used to, take our bikes and you could ride wherever you want, and, you had to be home when the streetlights came on, that kind of stuff. But now kids have to stay pretty close to home. The world's gotten a little weird. You can't even, what was that kid, 3 years old, walking through a mall and some guy snatches the kid up and tries to run away? So you can't really give your kids that kind of rope. It's a little difficult. And so it's easy for them to get kind of buried in some of this bad behavior. Because it's close to home and social media promotes it.
Yeah, social media.
So, but hobbies like photography, do you do workshops? Do you do those for the school so that they could, like, create a group within the school and they do that? Or,
we do a lot of, in Idaho and elsewhere, we do a lot of things that are focused around natural highs. So we could go into a school and might spend an entire day doing things at a school, promoting the idea of finding natural highs and avoiding the bad decisions. That resonates with young people. They like it. But what we have to do is help adults not model bad behavior. Our kids don't have much of a chance if mom and dad are getting stoned every night, or their governor is extolling the virtues of how many dispensaries we have now and how much money we've made off of selling weed. We've got to get adult behavior together. It's very common for me to get a call. I get a call, Fort Myers, Florida. Can you come and give a talk here, Monty, to our kids at school? And the common discussion is, okay, well, what do you want me to do? We want you to come and talk to our kids. Well, what do you want me to do with them? Well, the idea is we want you to fix our kids. And I'll say, do you want me to fix your kids in an hour? Do you think that will help?
Well, Monty, and if you can do that, what are we wasting our time on radio?
They kind of gulp, and what it boils down to is they're just checking the box. Oh, we had a speaker at our school. We had a red ribbon speaker. We had somebody come in, and it doesn't do anything. And so I say, if you want to bring me to Fort Myers, I will come, but only under this situation. I will come, but I want to talk to your adults first. I want to talk to your community stakeholders. I want to talk to your mayor, your county commissioners, your sheriff, your school officials, your religious leaders. I want to get them in one room and talk to them about the things your kids face today I need to talk to them about policies and laws and choices and decisions that they make in their community. Then I will talk to your kids. I don't think it helps for me to come to talk to your kids if adult behavior does not change. And that model usually goes from me giving a talk for 1 hour to all day or sometimes 2 days, talking to different groups, going to juvenile detention centers often, going to alternative high schools to talk to assemblies of kids where the kids understand the consequences of bad choices. It's so good when people understand how these problems start to get fixed. It starts with adult behavior. We cannot promote bad behavior as a society and expect good results. We cannot promote inebriation. We cannot promote the selling of products that are, think about this, the main goal of the pot industry now, well, the pot legalizers, they want everybody to grow it in their own home. And so
yeah,
that's
what a great
their
idea.
Ultimate goal. Everybody can grow. So but you're not talking about Woodstock weed. You're talking about 90% THC. That's an entirely different drug. It's an entirely different thing. It's not the legalization of pot as much as it is the commercialization of THC. That's the goal. THC, gram for gram, is similar to the spot price of gold today. That's why there is so much clamor over selling it. It is like liquid gold. No one should be trusted to promote a product as being not harmful or even healthy at that kind of a price. The money corrupts. It corrupts everybody. And when it corrupts government officials, bad policies and laws are created. And the nonsense gets worse. And the harms get worse. And more children are hurt. Families destroyed. Public safety declines. Bad behavior. Bad choices. We have to do better. You guys are doing a great job. I admire everything you're doing. And I appreciate being able to be on the show.
Well,
we like
adding, you know, it's always good to add more perspectives, more voices. And, you know, we've done a lot of shows about the detail of the chemical composition, about, you know, lots of facets of this. And so I really hope if this is a topic that people are kind of thinking, you know, I was kind of in favor of this before, but wow, what is going on? It's really worth looking into, and it's fascinating to find out. I mean, we've had one guy on, he's a pharmacist, and while they were trying to legalize it in Washington, the police were really basically on board because they were promised a big, you know, a big budget increase, and they felt like they could do a lot of good with the increase in the budget, so they didn't oppose the legalization. But it never that never pencils, you know.
No.
Foolish decisions were made 10 years ago based upon promises, false promises. There's no excuse for those today.
Right, because we got enough history under our belt.
Yep.
Like when we were looking at all these things here, we were like, oh my gosh. Now, remember, Oklahoma was talking about it. We're like, no, don't do it. You're going to become us. And they did, and they are.
Well, Oregon, you know, they did it, and then they decided it was so great they're going to legalize hard drugs.
Yeah, everything.
And that was a big flop, and now they're reversing all of that. It was a disaster.
I think we call that a bust.
Yeah.
Sadly, our neighboring states provide Idaho with all the evidence they need to stay the course.
Yeah.
We view ourselves as an island of sanity in a sea of insanity, and our goal is to preserve and protect the way of life and culture here that we enjoy and not adopt ridiculous ideas from other states. You serve as the poster children for bad ideas. So
it's just a thought that you're probably going to need border patrol of your own.
We have so many people moving here.
I kind of know that, yeah.
Moving, those bad choices. But we love people that come here if they want to preserve the same thing.
We sent you our previous sheriff, though, so we're up in your game. We're increasing the quality of your citizenry.
Well, the people, some of our best, some of the most loud opponents of any of this nonsense are people that have moved here from California and other states. They're eyewitnesses, and they come here and say, "No, it is not happening here." This is some of the loudest voices in the legislature. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
Wow!
Thank you, Monty.
Well, we can queue up Ain't No Rest for the Wicked, since obviously that's the deal, and the chat in our thing wasn't work, so we're just going to roll an audible here. even the music has failed me at the end. Never fails. Well, Monty, we appreciate you going on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride with us, and we look forward to having you come back. But I really do hope people go to the site for today. It is August the 10th, 2025, by the way, in case we play this again, but because I'm sure we will. And I hope you go in and look at Monty's pictures because they're fantastic. And I hope you get tons of speaking engagements, Monty. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Monty. Thank you. Keep up the great work.
You too.
For good.